you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
It's a disgusting way to do talk radio, isn't it?
Afternoons on the Score.
White Sox general manager Chris Getz. Is next year 100 losses and the year after that? What's your timetable on all that? I mean, I love the idea of building up the team and everybody going to be good and we're all going to enjoy the fruits of that labor for years to come. It's just, I got older family members and friends who feel like they're going to die before it happens.
Well, you know, like I said, this is not something that can be just turned around overnight.
Were you waiting for the losing streak to end? Was that a factor?
I think we were all waiting for that to end.
To make
now,
a move.
How related that was to making the managerial change.
We are laughing. And we are very good friends.
Couple of good nervous chuckles from Chris Getz. From some very good questions from Mully and Haw this morning. It was very compelling stuff with the White Sox general manager.
I thought those guys, Mully and Haw, were terrific. It's like the questions were incisive. They were tight and direct. And Getz gave some pretty good answers. I thought he represented okay for the most part. I thought those moments right there that Tanny played were incredible.
Well, but, I mean, whatever you can invoke that you know people who are White Sox fans that fear they're going to be dead before you're good again.
Yeah,
that's a hell of a thing to make a baseball general manager confront.
It was interesting. Like, you know, Getz told you how long it takes in one of his preambles. He was talking about, yeah, you know, we're having trouble on the field, but on the field is basically about what you've been doing in the organization for, you know, 5 to 7 years. Ding! There it is! 5 to 7 years. Cubs had a perfect rebuild of 5 years. Fifth year, they win the World Series. Fourth year, they're in the NLCS. That's like way, way ambitious. Took the Astros 6 years. But all that, of course, by the old rules.
That's what I was just going to say.
Yeah, man.
Old rules in terms of, you know, be bad, get a top draft pick,
right,
and all that. It's harder now.
It is harder now, and those orgs were given the freedom to really do it from the bottom to the very tippity top, and smart baseball people given a chance to allocate the money exactly as they wanted to and revamp every level of the organization, and that's not what has happened here is happening here.
And even if you do,
there's no guarantee.
There's not even close to a guarantee.
Absolutely.
I mean, how many World Series do the Rays have? You know, the Royals, they made it to the World Series, lost in seven. They happened to get back the next year and win it. But if they didn't, it very easily could have been one pennant and done.
Yeah, it's
very tough to do.
I would say that the Rays and the Royals and the Brewers and Cleveland are organizations that will never do the spending to get over the top once they get to a certain level.
Yeah.
The White Sox theoretically should be able to do that. Should be able to do that. And I think I've shown a willingness. Look, if they're going to get their payroll up to 180, 190 or something like that,
yeah,
then you can top off a rebuild and maintain it for a few years.
And the Royals, to their credit, did add significant payroll, you know, God, how am I blanking on the guy's name? Why am I blanking on his name? Guy had horses, crazy windup, starting pitcher.
Johnny Cueto.
You should know his name.
Thank you. God.
It was awesome.
I was giving speaks to don't tell him the name.
God, that was
mortifying. I should have done it. It was awesome. He did like the thing with the arm. Like, you know, the guy who threw the ball.
It was unbelievable. And then they added him and Zobrist in one deadline. It was incredible.
What are we doing here?
I'm sorry. I forgot. Sorry.
Incredible.
All right, my bad.
No, it's good. Just killer stuff for Mully and all. Especially Mully, who loves the White Sox, and you could tell how angry he was that for that entire interview. He's like, Chris, I hate this. I hate everything that's happening. And I didn't hate you, but now I kind of hate you as well. Your thoughts. I mean, it was awesome. First question was like, yeah, you seem to be a nice person, and people have said good things about you. I know some of those people, and that's all good. Now you've sullied your entire legacy. How do you feel? I was like, go, man, go. God, it was so good.
Yeah, well.
But anyway.
It's just a baseball manager.
Yeah, the whole, it's just a baseball manager.
That's the thing.
For an organization that is so far away.
Okay, but it's beating Mully down. Right, the shirt you got him, Shane, was I hate this team.
I don't like our team.
I don't like our team.
The Chris Getz quote.
Yeah, I don't like our team.
With the pinwheels behind it.
Yeah, it makes more sense. And then Steve Stone was on with Mully and Haw earlier today, and he used quite a way to describe how this whole about his tweet. Yes, because his tweet, he was going back and forth with White Sox fans.
And Stoney sent a tweet, and then you sent it to the group chat this morning.
He was replying to White Sox fans, and he was, you know, basically non-committal to whether or not he was going to be back next year, and the guys asked him about it.
Well, I think he asked me about if I was going to come back next year, and I said I'll have more about that later in the season because, you know, when you're going through a year like this, and make no mistake, everybody who feel something about this organization, and I know we have some really passionate fans. They can tell you, you know, they've given up on this, they've given up on that, but the first thing they do is look and see what the White Sox did or the moves they might have made or anything along those lines. So I think when you're born with that feeling of the White Sox in your blood, it was passed down from your family to you, and you'll pass it down to your family after. I think that you get involved on a day-to-day basis. Summer means baseball. Baseball means the White Sox. And we have a lot of fans like that who get really aggravated when things aren't going well. You could hardly go much poorly than they've gone this year. And so I don't want to do anything now with a feeling of, the depression really that comes with your team not performing. And I think that's what I was saying is I'm not going to evaluate anything now. I'll wait and see what happens down the road.
Wow.
Depression.
That's, he took the time and carefully chose the word. And God, man. I love that he cares like that.
To be doing it for as long as he's done it, to been in the game of baseball for as many decades as he's been in it, to still be able to have that level of care is an admirable thing.
That
is just admirable. Any walk of life, admirable.
I agree. And it's very, very difficult to fake it and not be connected. I guess that's what I should say instead of fake, to have yourself compartmentalized from it. It's a constant thread in conversations with broadcasters that I've had about trying to, like, you know, what do you do? Like, and you know, Pat Hughes always says, when you signed up for all of it. You didn't just sign up for the good times. You signed up for all of it. But usually in a team's case, that means, well, the final 2 months, I guess it's not going to happen. Well, now we're moving on to other priorities, and here we are. But imagine being the White Sox broadcaster last year and then thinking it was going to be better. Then you start out 3-22.
Yes, long season after that. Long season after that.
3-22. And then, Danny, they set a record for team losing streak with 14. Then a little while later,
they beat it.
They beat that record.
Comfortably. Yeah.
So it is a remarkable run of losing that will take a toll on somebody. So, yeah, depression is a heavy word to use.
Yeah, it is. Stoney talks about his contract. He talks about his future. He likes the speculation around it. I don't know how many years he signed on for this last time, but obviously at his age and his tenure in the game, he can leave whenever the hell he wants to, and his legacy is more than intact. He's one of the great analysts in the history of the sport. So it wouldn't be completely surprising, I would say, for him to, I don't want to do this again.
No, it's. I mean, look, those broadcasters. Sometimes they're employees of the broadcast entity, but often they are what Steve Stone and John Schifrin are, which are employees of the team. So the change in their broadcast, which is happening at the end of this season, has no bearing on the employment.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, if Steve Stone wants to continue with Chicago Sports Network, he can broadcast White Sox games as long as he wants. That is very clear.
We frequently get those questions.
You're right.
We've gotten those questions about this particular broadcast team. They're employees of the team. And Stoney will be able to do what he wants. He's still very, very good at that job.
You know, he's got a partner, so it's got to be weird too to go from a beloved booth to one that was just ranked dead last in baseball by a vote of 13,000 White Sox fans.
That does have to be weird.
That has to be weird.
And there's been a lot of attention that's come at that booth that his partner has brought on. The booth.
His
partner's picked some fights, put himself out there.
With who?
I don't know.
Mostly non-reporters. Don't worry about it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wouldn't affect you.
Bad reporting from non-reporters. So, not like you've remembered the line or anything.
Right.
Yeah. That bad reporter, what a dumbass. He doesn't have any good info.
Yeah.
Neither of them do.
He never fights with anybody.
Jason Benetti, a guest next week on the PBP, by the way. I'm putting him on next week.
The awful reporting by a non-reporter and a radio station in town unfortunately went with it because that's just what they do.
But, oh, okay.
Oh, that's just what they do. We just do our jobs.
We just get it right.
That's just what we do.
We just go with stuff that ends up being confirmed.
Did you guys see what I quote tweeted, speaking of Benetti, what he got to do last night on the broadcast?
No.
I did. I didn't see it until today. It's amazing. Go ahead.
Jason Benetti got to eat on the Tigers broadcast last night and nobody...
He was allowed to eat?
Yeah, he ate crickets.
Yeah, in Seattle.
He ate crickets.
He ate crickets? He was allowed to eat bugs?
Yes.
There's no way Jerry would have gone
Boyer
for that.
Is turning in his grave. He's turning in his office.
He took a shot of it, too. He dumped the whole bag of them into there.
Yeah.
The bowl, whatever it was.
Looked like he was having a great time.
Looked like he really was having a great time.
Very clean eater, I'd say.
Yeah, it was great.
I was happy with it.
Even of bugs.
Yeah.
Right. You could eat something disgusting on camera, and it just made for a really good, viral, fun moment in the third inning of Tigers-Mariners.
How about that?
A lot of viral moments are finding their way to him. Benetti is creating.
Creative broadcast.
Oh, the thing last week or the week before where like each player gave him a random word that he had to work in during their at-bat.
I saw that. That was funny.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good.
Funny.
That is and listeners, viewers never knew it because he just found a way to work it in because he's a very facile thinker and communicator.
Yeah,
yeah, good. There is that.
On the north side, we get Dan Weider in 10 minutes, but in Crane Kenny at 4 o'clock.
They
need a star, and we've talked about this for a long time, and we've talked about how the positions are kind of locked up.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find stars who are available as well. Like, you know, even in this upcoming offseason, I saw Sahadev Sharma touched on this a little bit in his piece over The Athletic. Like, could they trade for one? Who would they trade for?
Yeah, I read that. Yeah,
yeah, right? And he mentioned Mike Trout. He mentioned another guy. And he did mention Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And let me say, I was of the opinion as of like a month and a half ago, even just a month ago, that Vlad was on the downside and not going to be someone I wanted to get into business with after next year. It's going to be an enormous contract in all probability. And I was not alone with that. Like, he had an unbelievable year in 2021, had 48 homers and an OPS over one. But since then, it's been good, but not like superstar good. His last 20 games, Vlad Guerrero, 10 home runs. He's taken more walks than he has strikeouts. Like, all he's doing is having incredible at-bats, one after another after another. Had a double, triple, and a homer last night. And this is a guy, he's now hitting .321 on the season, and that OPS is within reach. It's an outrageous moment here. The kind of run where you're like, oh yeah, that guy can carry a team. And the Blue Jays in this offseason are absolutely going to be entertaining offers for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. One more year of arbitration eligibility. He's making $19 million this year. His ARB number next year will probably be 25, 26. So you could make a trade for 1 year of Vlad Guerrero Jr. with the option to woo him to be signed, much like the Yankees did with Juan Soto. You could do that if you wanted to give up some assets. And boy, they should consider that if this is Vlad Guerrero now. And
again, well, I mean, it's 20 games, but yeah.
I know.
No, listen, of course.
Whew, with the power to all fields and just like, and every at bat is just a dominant. He's not like, he's not, no bad swings, which is what you saw from Vlad during that heyday of 20 and 21.
95 games this year at first, 14 DH, 6 at third. So.
He'd be a DH slash first base. He'd be like a platoon first base. The other one DHs with Michael Bush. Or you could move Bush over to second base if you trade Nico Hoerner, because Bush can play second.
Obviously, you get worse up the middle.
Yes, you do.
Going from Gold Glove to Michael Bush. Mm-hmm. And then, but Bush has been pretty good defensively at first
Bush
base.
Bush has gotten a lot better over the course of the
season.
He has shown you a guy with an infielder's mindset and a hard worker who is capable of improvement. That would be an intriguing thing to think about. That's for sure.
Vlad Jr. won a Gold Glove at first in 2022.
That's interesting. I didn't remember that he had.
That's interesting. Okay. So I mean, because it's not a normal position to necessarily want to platoon with. It's not like the position you think of where I got to get guys off their feet and play them at. You know, because they're not as much running and all that sort of thing. So it's not a.
It wouldn't be a classic platoon. I'm just saying you'd want to be finding a way to get both those guys in your lineup just about.
Oh no, of course, of course.
So one would be DHing.
They want a roving DH, but it is seeming more and more likely that if they are going to add a huge impact bat, that they are going to lose the ability to have a roving DH. Like, right, if they are as locked in, Hap, Seiya, PCA, Nico, Dansby, Bush, Paredes, unless you got an awesome offensive catcher, which there's like three of them in the world, you're probably going to lose the ability to have a roving designated hitter.
Probably. But, you know, you can. There's always ways that you can end up massaging that. Like if they signed an outfielder, then Seiya could be a DH, and you'd probably worry less in right field defensively, you know. And Seiya could play sometimes, but not all the time out there. So, you know, there's some stuff you could do. I mean, you could break the bank with Soto and just have Seiya be a DH and have Soto play right.
What if Bellinger is back here and Bellinger played right and Seiya DH.
Yeah, I that's what I would advocate for. If Cody comes back next year, I'd be the guy advocating for much more Seiya in DH or in left and let Hap DH every once in a while. I don't think Seiya is a guy I want to be my everyday right fielder.
Yeah, I don't see why you would do that though.
Just to give Hap a day off his feet, like those kind of things.
Oh yeah, not as the norm. You're not talking 5 days a week.
No.
Yeah, okay.
Talking Seiya as your DH 5 days a week.
Yes, Seiya is your DH 5 days a week.
And a really nice outfield option, you know, as a fourth guy.
Still doesn't add a bat though. Right? It still doesn't add a bat. It just makes you slightly better defensively. But significantly better defensively.
Yeah.
But it doesn't add a bat.
But with Paredes, you know, if they can upgrade at catcher. You know, I mean, it's that. Then we're back to where we were, which is like maybe they have to think about making a deal of some kind. You ask, I mean, if you want to upgrade, you know, Seiya could be your left fielder and you have Bellinger and right, and you could find a DH of another stripe if you can ask Ian to waive his no trade and see if he'd go somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, so you might have to get creative this particular offseason to find a way to wedge that superstar in.
Just sign Juan Soto. Just sign Juan Soto.
Sign Juan Soto and DH Seiya. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, you're a lot better.
Yeah.
You are a lot better in that scenario. Bush, Bellinger, Seiya, and Soto.
Yeah, you're
in the middle of your lineup,
sure.
Like 2 through 6.
Yeah, it's great.
Right? 2 through 3 through 6, whatever.
Yeah, and you could put Paredes right after that if you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's much better. All right.
All right, good. I'm glad we solved
Jed's
that.
Job is easy.
Yeah.
Just spend $400 million. On Juan Soto.
Yeah, and the thing about Bush is the texture points out, you'll see, and there are times like, man, Bush is the best hitter. Like, wow, they're pinch hitting Patrick Wisdom for him. Because Bush against lefties is still a challenge. And, you know, so the idea of sitting him against some lefties could give you some flexibility on that front.
how close is Roma Dunze to DJ Moore and Keenan Allen? If the season started today, how would the offense look? We're going to ask Dan Weider, who's seen a lot of Bears training camps, where they're at right now ahead of this preseason opener in Buffalo. Weiderer next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
I'll tell you, I am fired up today because how about them Bears?
Dan Weiderer.
Dan Weiderer from the Chicago Tribune again.
Bears beat report and enterprise writer for the Chicago Tribune.
This story by Dan Weiderer, it's obviously very well reported.
Covering the Bears for 670 The Score and 2400 Sports.
I've said this before, playing quarterback in the NFL is a lot like marriage. It's not about being a hero all the time. It's about limiting your mistakes. And if you do make a mistake, make sure it's not a catastrophic one.
We'll mention this mainly because Chicago Tribune writer Dan Weaver said we would mention this nugget.
We want it to be a fast Friday and a fast focus Friday.
Dan Weiderer.
His name is Dan Weiderer. Weiderer time. Weedsy with Danny and Speeds. Weiderer time. Bears. The Take the North pod. Dan Weiderer talks football with you.
He's getting ready to go to Buffalo to watch Caleb Williams play football and probably some other guys on the Bears. I don't know who else we have, but they got Caleb Williams, so that's going to be exciting. He's with us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. What's up, Weedsy?
Not much. How are you guys today?
Doing very well. We haven't talked to you a ton. You've been out there for all of the practices. This is, defense ahead of the offense time of year, but you've seen a lot of these. How is this offense relative to recent offenses of Bears past, like at this point of training camp?
The defense is ahead of the offense right now. That's undeniable. I think that there is obvious signs right now of an offense that has a rookie quarterback learning a new system with a coordinator that wasn't here last year and an offensive line that hasn't been cohesive for the first 3+ weeks of camp. And so there's a lot to work through. They've got time to work through it. They've got opportunities to work through it. Tomorrow starts a period of 13 days where we've talked about it. They've got 3 preseason games left. They've got a crossover practice with the Bengals. There's a lot of meaningful work that has to get crammed in to these next 13 days, and hopefully they'll be able to get the most out of it.
If Nate Davis is not a go at the beginning of the year for whatever reason, are you convinced that it's Ryan Bates at a guard and Coleman Shelton at center?
Yes, that's plan B. Okay. That would be the way it sets up, and it may set up that way tomorrow.
Okay. Is there nobody else at guard that they like? Do they feel that Coleman Shelton is totally an acceptable center behind Ryan Bates? I'm worried about the center position very much, Dan.
Yeah, well, they thought that they went out and got 2 guys that can start for them at the center position. And so they don't feel the anxiety that you feel about having to pivot at that position, knowing that Bates has the versatility to move over to guard. There is Matt Pryor. There is Jatari Carter. Those guys will be on the field at some point tomorrow, trying to work their way into a rotation in the interior of the line. But that seems to be where they'll head. And right now, when Matt gives you the update this week that Nate Davis has gone from day to day to week to week, you can plan accordingly, because Nate Davis at week to week is not a very promising thing.
Where is Caleb Williams as a rookie relative to Justin Fields and Mitch Trubisky as rookies at this point?
It's layered, Danny, because I think that the on-field stuff is still really bumpy. And so, like, I think when they walk into Buffalo tomorrow, so much of the internal focus is going to be on operational stuff with Caleb. It's going to be everything that happens before the snap. Can he get in the huddle? Can he call the play with command? Can he get him lined up quickly? Can he recognize what he's seeing before the snap? If someone's lined up incorrectly, can he get him realigned? All that kind of stuff. They want to see the operational stuff be clean, no pre-snap penalties, no false starts because the cadence is off. So there is some bumpy things there where I think Caleb is ahead, and you hear it from every single teammate you talk to, is his connectivity in that locker room is unique, and it's rare, and it's at a level where it creates buy-in. And I had a lengthy conversation earlier this week with Cole Kmet about just how kind of striking it is for a kid at that age in his first, you know, few months on the job in the NFL to have the maturity to be able to forge these bonds with guys. And I related it to what I heard from teammates of Devin Hester leading up to the Hall of Fame, where it's like, it just creates sort of this energy because they know what kind of talent you have. And they understand that if they rally behind you and do their best, it will elevate you and then you will elevate them. And so that magic starts to happen. And so that's where I think Caleb is a little bit ahead. I think it's going to take a little while. And I think that Chicago might be in for a little bit of a rude awakening in September if they're expecting him to be playing at, you know, Pro Bowl levels right out of the gates.
Have you talked to your colleagues in like Houston or, you know, with the Chargers or, you know, some of the other good rookie quarterback seasons that we've seen recently? I'm thinking Herbert. I'm thinking RG3. I'm thinking, obviously, CJ Stroud, Cam Newton, Andrew Luck. We've seen some really good ones recently. I'm wondering, like, how they performed early in camp before they ultimately had really good rookie seasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I know, obviously, the most recent one is Stroud, and he did not have the greatest start to camp, did not have a preseason that would have foreshadowed the type of year that he put together and helping them into the playoffs and putting up the statistical production that he did. You know, I think the one thing that the coaches love about Caleb the most is that he kind of leans into his struggle, and he understands kind of the value of mistakes and the value of experience. And I think tomorrow is one of those moments where, more than anything, it's just getting experience. You know, it's putting another experience under your belt. It's seeing this stuff live and feeling the speed for the first time with guys able to hit you and figuring out how you need to operate in that regard. And so every one of these little checkpoints is going to be important for him to just kind of file away. And I think he'll be able to get there. You know, there's so much in his makeup and his skill set that tells you he's got the best chance to have a great chance. And so now it's just about kind of understanding that, you know, you do have to climb the stairs to get there. And so it's going to be grueling at points.
I'm trying to picture what a rude awakening would look like. I don't want it, by the way. I'd rather be like awoken with love and a gentle caress.
Yeah. Frankly. I mean, we all would, right? I mean, I wasn't expecting that last part.
Sure. But, you know, I know.
You can get that gentle caress from somebody there in the studio. But
not you, Dan. I wasn't asking. But what is a rude awakening for Bears fans look like? I mean, what are you imagining? Like, bad decisions or what?
No, I mean, I just some predictable rookie struggles. And I just think because this team is ready to compete and this team is ready to contend, that there is a hard recalibration of the brain if you're a fan to say that, oh man, we've got to reverse our timetable to go back to what it's like to have a rookie quarterback playing the position. You know, some untimely turnovers, some penalties that you don't want to have that kill a drive, some sloppy throws. You know, one of the things that I pointed out yesterday, and it caused a, you know, brief mushrooming on social media, is that in some of these 7-on-7 periods, Caleb's holding on to the ball too long, and sometimes he doesn't get rid of it at all. And, you know, in a 7-on-7 period, it should be out, or it should be, you know, the decision is made and you're on to the next thing. And so there's going to be some of that where you're going to be sitting on your couch on a Sunday and going, man, get rid of it. And then something will happen and you'll just go, man, that's just what happens with a rookie quarterback trying to figure this stuff out on the fly. And so, look, like you see on social media, these ultimatums, he better be CJ Stroud or else, he better throw for 4,000 yards or else. And you just stop and go, well, wait a second. You know, we all should be aware of what the goal here is. The destination for Caleb is to become a top tier quarterback in this league. The destination for the Bears is to become a Super Bowl contender for most years of the next 10. And so, like, if you keep that as kind of the target, then you can't get caught up in sort of the peripheral noise that people want him, the boxes they want him to check.
Boy, there's a lot there. And we could talk about developmental strategy, and we could talk about schematically how you help a quarterback when your team is actually good and stuff. But instead, let's go this way. He referenced Matthew Stafford as a top two quarterback in the NFL. Yeah. Loves that guy and that style. That fascinated us. We know Aaron Rodgers is his number one. So is a commonality there the tuck and run, as you coined it, for Justin Fields? Are we going to see a tuck and extend as opposed to a tuck and run for Caleb? He seems to be a guy, and he loves quarterbacks, who tuck and extend the play and then make a throw, whereas we had to will Justin to eventually learn that. That seems to be what Caleb likes to do.
Yeah, I gave you the TAR stats in 2022. We can go to the SAT stats in 2024, and it's the scramble and throw, right? It's keeping those plays alive. That's his superpower. That's his gift. That's what he is going to do that is at an elite level that is going to help him navigate some of the rookie bumps I just talked about. And so when you hear Shane Waldron talk about his ability to do that and do that without making game-changing mistakes, it's special, right? And so now you've got to do it on this level, and you've got to figure out how to do that without making game-changing mistakes. You've got to figure out how to do that without over-relying on it. You've got to figure out how to do that while also understanding that Ryan Poles has surrounded you with an absolute core of high-level playmakers, and so you just let them do their thing at times. And so it'll be fascinating to watch him do that, but I think that is something that as long as he uses it the way he's used it for most of his career, it's going to be a gift. If you start to use it as a crutch, then it can become a problem, and they'll just have to keep an eye on that. But it is something that's going to give him a chance in the early going to kind of soften some of the blows of some of the mistakes he makes.
What did you make of Eberflus on Hard Knocks saying, you know, year one is development, year two is progress, year three is mastery, when he was talking to Saban?
As far as the quarterback goes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think some of this stuff is going to have to be mastered quicker than year three.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
I don't think they're going to have the benefit of worldwide patience into 2026. You know, you guys know, you feel the optimism, you feel the enthusiasm, you feel sort of the urgency. So I don't think you can wait into year three, but as long as you're climbing the stairs, and as long as you feel like this thing is on the trajectory that it's supposed to be on, then you should be okay. I think one of the things that they've done a great job inside the building of is understanding this. Like, internally, I have very few fears that they're going to get lost in the noise and lost in the chaos. Now they've just got to kind of steer the young quarterback through that, particularly when games start in September, because there's going to be a lot of hype when he plays really well, and there's going to be a lot of noise when he plays poorly. And so you just got to navigate that collectively. And I think they've put together a pretty good process to handle that. And so we'll see where that heads.
All right. So the other rookie, obviously, that's got a ton of pressure and a ton of high profile attached to him is Roma Dunze.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by this. How much of a gap, which would of course be understandable for it to exist, but we do see rookies at receiver produce early if they are special. It is becoming more and more common in the NFL. How much of a noticeable gap is there between Roma Dunze and Keenan Allen and DJ Moore?
Well, you're talking about two high-level guys that you have the benefit to learn from every single day out there. And I think Rome is really enjoying that and being able to be a guy who is very self-critical, who is very hungry to learn, and to have those resources in your meeting room every day after practice to go through things is incredibly valuable. Statistically, it's hard to know what it's going to look like for Rome, because we don't know how this ball is going to get spread around and how much those other two guys are going to produce. The one thing that Roma Dunze has that every single person in the building, including Keenan Allen, including DJ Moore, including Chris Beatty, the wide receivers coach, tell you is that he just comes in with a football intellect that is far superior to most rookies who walk into the league. He just understands the game. And so now you've got to figure out at this level, how do you create separation? When you don't have separation, how do you make those same contested catches that made you special in college? I think he's going to have a lot of opportunities to do that. It's just going to be kind of a process for him of understanding that, unlike Caleb, he's got a couple other guys in front of him that are going to be able to handle the production, and he doesn't have to have this breakout production early to catch everyone's attention. And he's just got to run his own race and understand that he's got a lot of gifts that are going to help this team in the long run.
You think he starts the year as the punt returner?
I don't know. Like, and that's a position that even through camp, when you're watching who they throw back there, I'm not sure they know yet where they want to lean. And so a lot of roster decisions have to unfold here in these next 13 days, as we talked about. I mean, we're talking about, you know, Bayless Jones is one of these roster fringe guys who's now going to get some looks as a ball carrier in the backfield tomorrow, trying to to carve out a niche. I don't look at him as a punt returner at all, obviously, but when you're looking at special teams, you want to make sure that you've got guys that can help you in other phases as well. And so they've got some decisions to make there, whether it's in the defensive backfield, the receiver room, and trying to figure out what the roster looks like before you choose who the punt returner is going to be.
All right, let me throw a couple of names at you. You tell me if they're competing for a roster spot, okay?
Okay.
You said Velus. I think we know that Velus is fighting for a spot. Is Khalil Herbert fighting for a roster
yes.
spot?
Undeniably, yes.
Okay, because I find myself wondering if Velus and Khalil, you know, it's like...
One or the other, right? Like, I think you can't keep both, I don't think, given the dynamics of your roster right now.
Okay. Is Brett Rypien fighting for a roster spot?
Yes, but I think, like, Brett Rypien is very safe in the Nate Peterman-type role where, like, if you want to cut him for a day and resign him to the practice squad and stash him there, you can go ahead and do that, you know?
That's pretty cool. Is Jalen...
Speaks was a big fan of Nate Peterman's roster churn last year.
Taxi guy.
It really made him happy.
It's so convenient. It's incredible to have a guy that you want, but nobody else does. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, but they can be a value in the room.
Is Jalen Jones fighting for a roster spot?
We've talked about the depth of the secondary, and he's had a pretty good camp to this point. Now, you know, Matt and Ryan will both tell you that, like, good camps mean a lot. Good games, when the lights come on, mean even more. And so these next few opportunities to go out against a different opponent and make some splash plays and catch people's attention are going to be very important. But that is a position of strength for the Bears. And so I think there's going to be a very good cornerback or two that doesn't make the roster. And Jalen's part of that mix.
And then Dante Pettis, Colin Johnson, DeAndre Carter, those guys are all at the bottom of the receiver thing with a chance or what?
Yeah. All fighting, all battling here. And, you know, obviously Colin Johnson shows you some things in the Hall of Fame game, and then he's hurt this week. And one of his problems here in the first few years of his NFL career has been getting sidelined by misfortune and some untimely injuries. And so you got to get back out on the field, you know, and build off the big performance you had in week one to let the people know that you're going to be durable and you're going to be available for the long haul. And then, you know, Pettis is one of those veterans where you know who he is, right? And you're trying to find an upgrade. And if you can't find an upgrade, you say, okay, we've got a solid route runner, a guy who can catch punts reliably, but you hopefully want more as you're building your team into a contender.
Dan Wiederer on his way to Buffalo, over under three possessions for the starters.
Yeah, I'd go under. I would guess two, but Matt was really, really vague about it. You know, I'm not really sure why yesterday about, you know, we got a target number of snaps in mind, but don't really want to tell you what that is. And so we'll see. I if they get the ball first, I see them playing the entire first quarter. If it's second, then you play a little bit into the second quarter. I'd say two series and then they're probably done.
All right. Enjoy Buffalo. We'll talk soon.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you. Stan Wiederer.
Velus or Khalil Herbert interests me because Khalil, better running back, but you don't love him as a blocker anyway. And you used to use him as a kick returner. You're not going to do that anymore, it seems. So Velus is a kick return option. And if you can get a couple of runs out of him, then maybe you don't use Velus because they got Roshan and Swift, obviously, now.
Yeah. Velus drafted by Ryan Poles, probably a better all-around athlete, has some more utility as a receiver and a special teamer. But Khalil Herbert, a straight running back, but you could always find a running back in season.
Right.
Like if you suffer injuries to Swift and Roshan, there's always a veteran running back that you can sign for a week or two. So
I think Herbert's in trouble.
Maybe. Might yeah. Not. Probably, but Velus also is not trustworthy. All it'll take is one fumble in the preseason for that to be completely eliminated.
Yeah, and Brad Biggs has been talking about this, saying, like, if you saw Velus Jones in the backfield, you know it's a run play. They're not going to ask Velus to block anybody in pass pro.
Right.
As a running back.
Yeah.
Or will they?
Right, that's what they want you to think. That's what they want you to think. We got Crane Kenny coming up in 15 minutes. Parkinson Spiegel on the score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Danny, love to you. Love to speak. I give love to Shane, and same thing goes for Danny.
Afternoons on the score.
I think Caleb Williams has a huge upside, and I watched a lot of his tape, and I'm a believer in him. But to hold him to the C.J. Stroud threshold, I think is unfair to the kid.
So, people keep saying that. Can we get specific on what's unfair about Stroud? Is it the 4,000 yards? Is it only five interceptions? Is it the playoff win? What is it specifically about Stroud that's unreasonable? Because if you look at Stroud's actual game log last year, it's impressive, but he played 15 games. He won 9 of them. He went 9-6. And he had 23 touchdowns, but in only one game did he have more than 2 touchdowns. He had a 5-touchdown outlier. So 5 of his 23 touchdowns were in one game against Tampa Bay.
That 2-week stretch of the games against the Bengals and against Tampa Bay was...
Yeah, 470 yards, 356 yards, 6 touchdowns, 1 pick.
Was the Tampa Bay game where he had the game winner to Tank Dell?
Yeah.
Or was
yeah.
it Cincinnati
I'm pretty
game?
Sure it was the Tampa game because that was the 5-touchdown game.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's outrageous.
It was outrageous.
I can answer. You threw out some stats there.
Yeah, because I just want to – because he was 14th in the NFL attempts.
Sure.
In attempts, he was 8th in yards. Like, it's not that crazy is all I'm saying.
I don't think the team wins are that crazy to throw out there, but I don't think the team wins are directly related to the quarterback a lot of the time. I mean, they're related, but, you know, they're not entirely related to the quarterback. I think the quality of the team makes it absolutely fair to look at the team's success and to dream of the playoff win, to dream of that. I think the 5 interceptions, Danny, like, even though that's Caleb's history in college, to have a lot of touchdowns and low interceptions, you know, it feels unfair to expect that kind of excellence. That the lack of mistakes for Stroud from the pocket is very, very special historically for a rookie quarterback.
We've only really seen it twice. Dak and Stroud. Dak had 4 interceptions his rookie year, and they won 12 games. And now he threw for way less yards, but
that was a great offensive line and
a great team.
Yep, and a great team.
Yeah, Dez Bryant, great offensive line. Witten was still there. I'm almost positive. You know, yeah, that was
Zeke, young Zeke.
Yeah, that was a much that was a very, very good offense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Dak had 4 picks. Stroud had 5 picks. That's crazy low.
Hey,
it's crazy low.
If Caleb's that guy, then all bets are off for everything in terms
Correct.
Of all the possibilities and all the dreaming and all the wish casting and everything.
Correct.
But I think when Mayock is talking about it, he's thinking about the relative lack of mistakes with the production of a rookie quarterback and just how rare that is.
Okay, I just would like it to get a little bit more specific.
That's why I'm here.
No, seriously, because we can't expect him to be C.J. Stroud. It's like, okay.
Let me just double check. Shane, is that why I'm here, as far as you know?
Specifics?
As far as I know, yeah.
As far as, yeah, right, specifics.
Right. Yeah, I'm just waiting for more direction from leadership, though.
I just want, I mean, in terms of what Danny needs, why I'm here is specifics for his arguments.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, he doesn't even research anything. He just kind of says anything that he's feeling and thinking and doesn't, like, look for backup.
Right.
So that's why you're here.
And then I shape the stuff. I shape the stuff and my responses. All of a sudden, he looks better. He climbs on the egress list.
We've always said that the only reason Danny is good is because of you.
That's what everyone says.
That's
what everyone in the media and the industry and the city.
It's about
Danny's
time.
Mom says.
Yeah.
Me and Ashley Brewer. You know what I mean? We're the people that make Danny look good.
Who is that?
That was his partner on the Colin Cowherd shows.
Oh.
That he filled in.
Very talented.
Yeah. You definitely let her do a lot of talking.
It's not about let. It's about the role of the show. Crane Kenny is coming on to talk.
Ashley.
Is that why Speaks is your Ashley Brewer?
Speaks is my Ashley Brewer.
That's right.
Yeah.
He talks for 6 minutes. I smile pretty and answer a few things.
Now to Speaks with Herdline News. Crane Kenny next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.